All right, so today we are in Be Set Apart, Part 9. Yeah, Part 9. I got some brand new people going, part what? Oh, 9's short so far. But don't worry, you won't feel lost, at least not too much. Okay, so Be Set Apart, Part 9. So what are we looking at? In Leviticus 19, it had told us that we are to be set apart, for I, Yahweh, your Elohim, am set apart. And we were trying to understand what in the world that means. And so we spent so far 9 teachings on that, or 8 teachings on that. So set apart comes from the word kodesh, or kadosh, okay? And it means to be consecrated, declared sacred, dedicated, or set apart for the service or worship of Yahweh. So this is something that has a very specific purpose. And we are to be a set apart people, which means that we are dedicated and set apart for the service and worship of Yahweh. All right? So to be set apart or to set something apart is to set it apart for the special purpose. And when you do it for a special purpose, it also should be obvious. In other words, it should be easily distinguished as different in a way that's open and discernible. All right? This is really important part of being set apart. It's not that you're set apart quietly in your closet and nobody knows. But you're also not out there like, you know, just all over the place, but you're just living this in a very real public way, being set apart in public, in the world. We're down here in the world, we're in the below, we're in the flesh, but we're not of it, we're in it, right? He says, I don't want you to take them out of the world, but not that they would be of, so they wouldn't be of the world. He doesn't want us to be of the world. All right, so let's go ahead now and look at Ephesians chapter 4. Now, as we lead into Ephesians chapter 4, I want to make us understand. It starts off with, I call upon you, therefore. Okay, there's that word again. He likes to put these words in that say, because of everything I already told you up to this point, I'm now making a point. So let's go back and just look quickly at what we've covered so far. He says, in the beginning, he was reminding them that in chapter 1, favor and peace to you in verse 2, he says, because you were chosen, verse 4, even as he chose us in him before the foundation of the world. So we were chosen to be set apart. We're chosen for a purpose. And then he kind of gives them a journey back through time, saying you were dead in trespasses in chapter 2. Don't forget where you came from. You were walking according to the course of the world. You were dead in your sins. Then we get into verse 11. He says, remember, you were once Gentiles in the flesh. Verse 12, that at that time, in that state, right? This, we're going to be talking about different states here. In this state, you were without Elohim, right? It says that at that time, you were without Messiah, excluded from citizenship of Israel, strangers from the covenants of promise, having no expectation and without Elohim in the world. That's where you were. He says, but now in Messiah, you were brought near. Okay, so he talks about that, and then we get into chapter, the end of the chapter, it talks about that we are no longer strangers, verse 19. We're not foreigners, but fellow citizens with the set-apart ones. So the set-apart ones started out as who? Mount Sinai's group, Israel. And he says that we, whether we were born of that genealogy or not, are fellow citizens, no longer strangers, with the set-apart ones. So if you're a fellow citizen, that makes you a set-apart one as well. And members of the household of Elohim. So let's understand that the household of Elohim is made up of set apart ones. It's not made up of Jews or Gentiles. It's made up of set apart Israelites. Okay? Whatever people were before, it says you were dead in your trespasses. You were Gentile. You were of the world. You were, at least even if you had the genealogy, your behavior might as well have made you of the world. He says, but now, because Messiah and the Torah and our choice, the covenant, has brought us near, we can be fellow citizens, no longer strangers. Okay, and this is built upon what? This is how you know it's about the Torah. Having been built, verse 20, on the foundation of the emissaries and prophets, Yeshua, Messiah himself being the chief cornerstone. Now, bear in mind, he says emissaries and prophets. We're going to talk about them today in chapter 4 to a certain degree, okay? But we are being built together as a building being joined together and grows into the set-apart dwelling place of Yahweh. This is what we're talking about, all right? Then in chapter 3, he starts talking about, where I want to get to. Verse 6, he's talking about the Gentiles to be co-heirs, united in the same body and partakers together in the promise in Messiah through the good news. Okay, we talked about that. Then we talked about Let's see. So that now, verse 10, through the assembly, the many-sided wisdom of Elohim might be known. So through our behavior, people will learn a lot more about Elohim and hopefully in a right way. Okay? So he then continues and says, let's see, in order that he might give you, according to the riches, verse 16, of his esteem, verse 17, that the Messiah might dwell in your hearts through belief, having become rooted and grounded in love, in order that, all of this is so that you might be strengthened to firmly grasp with all the other set-apart ones. So all set-apart ones are expected to be strengthened and firmly grasp what is the width, length, depth, and height. We talked about that quite a bit in the last part. So that we would have a relationship, a knowing relationship, to know the love of Messiah, a relationship with the love of Messiah, which surpasses knowledge. And this is all in order that you might be filled to all of the completeness that Elohim has for you, to be fully and complete. Now, we're going to talk about that quite a bit in chapter 4 as well. So he says, and to him who is able to do exceedingly above what we ask or think, according to the power that is working in us, to him be the esteem, etc. Amen. Now, he says, I call upon you, therefore, based on all of that quick little reference to the first three chapters, I, the prisoner of the master, I call upon you. And he's also humbly saying, I'm a prisoner of the master and I'm calling upon you, okay? To walk worthily of the calling with which you were called. To walk worthily. There's a word you don't get to hear too much on Sunday or in the mainstream because they don't want to tell you what is necessary to be worthy. Because worthy sounds like you have to earn that, and you do. You're not considered worthy if you didn't do anything to earn the designation as worthy. You have to do something that is worthy of whatever it is that you're being looked for at and examined for. Are you worthy of something? Do you deserve is really another way of saying it. Deserving of something. Have you earned and have you performed and have you become what makes you worthy of something? So he's telling us to walk in a worthy manner that's worthy of what? The calling. So he's called you to do what? He's called you to covenant. He's called you into a relationship that has you trusting and believing that if you do everything he says, you will receive all that your heart would desire to receive. But it's a trust and belief issue, right? Because people want to say, oh, well, they're getting into this works thing. Oh, works are critically important and also of no use without belief. Belief, of course, without works, as James says, is dead. That's useless too. And so he says, look, I call upon you because you were dead, because you're now drawn near and brought near with Messiah and all these other things. I call upon you then to walk in a worthy manner of what you have. I think that's a pretty reasonable thing for him to ask. And so I think we often can take for granted the calling we have. And by calling, we're not talking about ministry necessarily. Like we call that a calling, right? I'm called to ministry. No, you were called to be a set-apart people. You were called to be a child of the living Elohim. You were called to represent Yeshua and the Father. You were called to walk in a worthy manner. Okay, worthy of that calling. And so if that was important to you, you would be filtering all of your thoughts, all of your words, all of your actions, all your behavior through, is this worthy of a child of the living Elohim? Or is this worthy of a worldly person who just does whatever they want? Yeah, this is tough. Sheol isn't messing around here. This whole thing is about authority. Shocking. Everything in the book is about authority. Everything, not just the book of Ephesians. I mean, like the whole book, Genesis to Revelation, is about authority. Yours versus his. I know you want to think it's his versus Hasatan's. No, it's yours versus his. You may choose to follow Hasatan. You may choose to follow him, but it's a matter of authority. If you choose to follow him, it's because you believe him and that he will give and do all that he said. If you follow Hasatan, you're really not following Hasatan. You don't believe Hasatan for anything. You just believe when Hasatan encourages you to do what you want. So it's really believing you. So So you're either believing you or the Father. Hasatan simply is encouraging you to follow you. It's not that you follow Hasatan. Hasatan doesn't ask you to do anything that you don't already want to do. But he is encouraging you to do things that you want to do that are against what Yahweh wants you to do. And that's where the challenge is. So it's really you and your sovereignty versus him and his sovereignty and you submitting under it. And that's, when I say him, I mean the Father, right? And so he says, look, I call upon you, therefore. So, you know, when you go back home, I want you to reread the first three chapters, remember what I taught about it, and then read that first verse of chapter 4. So you know what he said, therefore. Because of everything I just said, you absolutely should walk in a worthy manner. You have an obligation to walk in a worthy manner. For after what he's done for you and pulled you out of, you had nothing. You had nothing. You had no Elohim, no Messiah, no Torah, no covenant. Nothing is what he says in chapter 2. You had nothing. You were dead. And he called you and gave you life. And in giving you life, your minimum expectation from him should be that you walk in a worthy manner. That's a reasonable expectation from the above, that you would walk in a worthy manner. Don't call yourself set apart and you're going to walk like the world. That is not a worthy manner. He says, walk in worthily of the calling with which you were called, do this in a certain way, with all humility and meekness, with patience, bearing one another in love, being eager to guard the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. One body and one Spirit, as you also were called in one expectation of your calling. So he's saying here, look, we can address this or, you know, kind of embrace this in a very selfish sort of way. We're going to just focus on him and our behavior and forget that this is a group activity. It's an individual activity, but it's also done in a group setting. Okay, the body, the assembly, the congregation, okay, corporate Israel as a whole. And he's saying, look, to do that, you're going to have humility. Plus, the world's got to watch you and look at you and see the humility. And they have to see the meekness, which is quiet strength. Okay? Meekness is not a doormat. It's quiet strength. Okay? With patience. Boy, we almost all of us fail at that one. We really need to work at that, right? Yeah. Bearing with one another in love. So now we know it's really talking about within the body more than it's even talking outside the body. Because he's saying, I want you to do this with humility and meekness and patience, bearing with one another. So, he wants us to be patient with each other first. Yes, with the world too, but be patient with each other. Bearing one another in love. Bearing, that means you need to, what does bearing mean? To take, to tolerate, to endure. You have to bear something. Bearing a burden means you're carrying something you'd rather not carry, and it's heavy. Okay, so you got to, you know, bear with one another in love. Oh, we're so intolerant. We're so quick to judge. We tear people apart to each other. We talk about them behind their backs and all that Lashon Hara stuff that we're doing. Look, if you're standing around a bunch of people who are tearing down somebody, then realize that at least that person or other people in that same group doing it are doing the same thing to you when you're not there. Because they're tearing down and tearing apart only the person that's not there. And as soon as you're not the person, you're the person that's not there, guess who they can probably talk about then? So if it's you, you're talking about people, guess what? They're going to talk about you when you're not there. That is not walking with humility, meekness, and patience, bearing one another in love. He says, being eager to guard the spirit of unity. It says the unity, but it's the fullness of the intention of unity. It says the unity of the Spirit, but really has to do with the idea of that we are all in the unity of the intention of the Father, right? That's what we're going to talk about, the Spirit as being the fullness of his intention, right? The Spirit of the law, the fullness of the intention of the law. So we should be eager to guard that. Not so much guarding every little dot and tittle, you know, jot and tittle, right? We're looking at the eagerness to guard the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. So we should be bound in shalom, okay? Bound in peace. Of course, we know we have a lot of counselings that we do with people inside this group and other groups that we work with that are fighting with each other and struggling with each other and having issues with each other because we're still very fleshly. And sometimes the one being mad at the other, it's sort of well-earned, but that doesn't mean that gives you then the right way to approach it is to lose your cool, right? To lose your stuff and get all upset. We're supposed to be eager to guard the spirit of unity. So how do we do that? Well, we should be seeking the path that leads to peace and unity. So how can we resolve something that brings peace and unity and not two people that don't want to show up the same day because they don't want to run into each other? That shouldn't be, although it's common. But we have people that'll be like, where were you last week? Well, I didn't want to go because so-and-so was going to be there, and I'm not happy with him or her or whatever, and blah, 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 blah. That's the body? Unfortunately, yes, at the moment. And that's why we're going to get some more instruction later in the chapter to fix that. He says, we're supposed to be eager to guard the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace, also guarding the idea that we are one body, with one intention, right? The fullness of the intent, the one spirit, the spirit of truth, as you also were called in one expectation of your calling. He expects, he has an expectation. You know, I do a lot of counseling before marriage, and in there, there's always what I call the expectations exercise. And I think that any relationship should have that. As a matter of fact, we're overdue to have a congregational expectations little meeting where we could talk about what you should expect from us and what we expect from you, and that we could all be on the same page with that. All relationships, whether they're expressed and spoken or not, have expectations. You meet somebody in a friendship, you have an expectation of what that's going to look like, so do they. If it matches enough, it'll work. If it doesn't, it won't. You meet somebody that you might marry. Again, you have expectations. If you get married and never talked about it, you already have an expectation. If you're the man, what a husband looks like in your head and what a wife looks like in your head. Of course, she has the opposite. She knows what in her mind a wife looks like and what a husband looks like. And if they don't match in the expectations, you will struggle. You will definitely struggle. So he's saying here, you were called and he gave us an expectation. He gave you an expectation. He expects, this is Exodus 19. This is the covenant at Sinai. I expect you to obey everything that comes out of my mouth in a trusting, believing form that it will bless you and keep you safe and transform you. And you can expect from me that I will take care of everything else. Anything that you need, everything that is, you know, that could be that you would need from an outside source to be provided, I will take care of it. All you need to do is trust me and obey. And that's an expectation. He says, look, you were called in one expectation. Now, if you were to go to most congregations, I shouldn't say it that way. If you were to go to a different congregation, like you go around to multiple congregations, I don't think you would hear one expectation. I think you would read into each person's sort of positional understanding as Yahweh, if you went to one congregation, let's say you go to congregation A, and they tell you this is what Yahweh expects. I promise you, if you go to B, it's not going to match exactly. Some ways it might, but it won't be. Then you go to C, and it's even different than A and B in some ways, even though some of it may be similar, right? Then you go to D, you get to say, there's so many different expectations that are being presented. There's only one expectation that in reality. But we're being presented that expectation in so many different forms that it's hard to know what his expectation is. Which is why the body is massively confused all the time and filled with questions because they want to please him and they don't know what to do. Because every time they listen to anybody different, each person gives a different understanding of the expectation. Again, we're going to clear that up, hopefully, in about 3 or 4 more verses. Well, 8 more verses. He says, there's supposed to be one body, one spirit, and one expectation that you were called to. One master, One belief, one immersion. Now, by one immersion, that means there aren't multiple baptisms. It's saying one immersion. In other words, baptism was the water part of changing a status. And so there's only one changing of status that he's talking about here, right? Through the one belief, the one mass, etc., you're changing your status from of the world to of Yeshua. You change the master of self and Hasatan to him. He says, one Elohim and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in y'all. He's Southern here. He's from the South. And in you all. And so this is again to remind everyone in the vertical where you aren't. He is above all. Yes, he's in you. Yes, he's everywhere. Okay, he's above all, he's through all, and he is in all. But he is above everything. He's above Hasatan, he's above you, he's above everybody that's ever existed. He's above Yeshua. The Father is above everybody. Yeshua himself says, my Father and I, okay, we are echad, but my Father's greater than I. He makes that very clear, that the Father is greater than the Son. What does that mean? We don't know what that means. We just know that in the vertical, he's higher up. Does that diminish Yeshua in any way? He didn't think so. Yeshua never thought that it diminished him in any way. He was very excited to have his role in bringing glory and honor to the Father. And he, as our example, is teaching us that that is what we're supposed to do as well. Bring glory and honor to the Father. Amen? All right, now. But to each one, okay, so he just gave us this big group understanding. Then he says, but to each one of us, right, favor was given according to the measure of the gift of Messiah. And so he gave us favor according to the measure of the gift of Messiah. So in other words, each one of us was given, just like in the parable of the talents, each person's given a measure of whatever they're given. That doesn't make you better or less. And you don't need to measure and figure out how much your gifting was given versus the other. And it's not talking about gifts, by the way, like the gifts of the Spirit thing. He's saying it was a gift to get you out of the I was dead in my trespasses place. He gave himself as a gift. He said each one of us, favor was given according to the measure of the gift of Messiah. You know what? You might even just look at it this way. Some of you needed it more. So it's not like you were given more. But some of you were really in some horrible places, and what he did, you know, really needed. You understand what I'm trying to say? Okay? So if we're on a scale that goes to the negatives, some of you were at like negative 20, and his death brought you back to zero. Some of you were at negative 120, and his death brought you to zero. So I think of it that way. But everybody got brought back up to zero. Okay? So I think that might be the best way to understand this verse. And I never taught that before, so pay attention, okay? Just got inspired with it as I'm saying it. Okay, each one of us was given favor according to the measure of the gift of Messiah. What was the gift of Messiah? He gave himself for us to live. And so I'm thinking now that the measure of it had to do with how much you needed it. Now, you needed it. Okay, and all of us fell short, all of us worthy of death. Some of us just were worse than others. Not to be judged. Because some of who are the worst in the Bible end up some of the best in the Bible because they turn their lives around. So don't hold yourself, just realize that his death took you from negative anything to zero no matter where you were. Okay? Now, but you're at zero, and now what you do with that gift brings you up. Okay? And we're all starting at the zero, so there's no advantages there. Well, you know, you didn't live the weird life I led and all the abuse, but you're still at zero like me. Doesn't matter. Okay? I was still at the negative. I was still having to die. I'm not even talking about me. I'm just using a generic person as an example, right? I was still in the negative. Whoever might think that, you know, they weren't as bad off as you were. Okay? Some of us led reasonably easier lives than others. Like, didn't have quite the trauma, drama that some others had, yet his death, burial, resurrection, etc. is the gift that got you to zero. Okay? And there's no advantage to the one who had worse or had less you know, issues. Everybody starts at zero. I think that's a very important thing. Then he says here, that is why it says he went up on high, he led captivity captive and gave gifts to men. So verse 8, so he took captive, the English coming out of the Greek is challenging. I bet you the Hebrew would make it a whole lot easier too under the Greek. So he took captive or led those that were in captivity out of captivity and gave them the gift of freedom and life. Is that a little bit more clear then to understand that challenging way that Paul words this? Okay, he went up on high, right? So he went from dying and then he went to sit at the right hand and he led the captives out of captivity. And the Greek actually reads better that way, and gave gifts to men. In other words, he gave us the gift of the potential for eternal life. The gift of being forgiven of your sins. The gift of potential eternity. But what does he went up mean, except that he also first went down into the lower parts of the earth? Okay, and he who went down is the one who also went up for, up far above all the heavens to fill all. All right, now, so what is it talking about? What does what he went up mean, except that he went down first into the lower parts of the earth? So we're not talking about that he went into like hell and he was dealing with people that were being tortured forever and all this other nonsense. Okay, that, none of that stuff is scriptural. So what are the lower parts of the earth? What is the flesh, the earth? It's the behavior. It's the people down here who are fleshly and earthly in the below. So he left the above. See, an Orthodox Jew would understand this very clearly, because they use this type of language about the above versus the below. And so he went into the lowest parts of the earth. Lowest meaning the worst, those that were completely disconnected. Those who are Ephesians chapter 2, dead in trespasses. And he went there first. And he came down and interacted with man. It said, he went down is also the one who then went up far above. So he came down, lived amongst us in the below, and now he's a far above everything. Is this making more sense now that you've read this chapter? Because I'm sure you've read these chapters and it's like a little shaky on how to understand it, right? Now, all of this is to set up the next part in verse 11. Okay, all of this is now setting this up. Remember, he said, I call upon you to walk worthily. You're to be eager to guard the unity. All these things that he's talking about, this is now setting up what he wants to really tell us. Hey guys, there's help in doing this. Verse 11, and he himself, Yeshua, gave some as emissaries and some as prophets, some as evangelists, some as shepherds and teachers. Didn't we just read that all of this in chapter 2 was built upon the foundation of emissaries and prophets? Emissaries is, in the Hebrew would be shaliach, which is a sent out one, or an apostle from out of the Greek, okay? And so it's one who was sent to do something. That's the foundation. Even Abraham started off as being sent. He said, Abraham, come here, I want you to go somewhere. He was sent. He was told to leave his land and go somewhere. And the prophets. He says, look, he gave some to be, this is what we call the fivefold ministry. It's, you know, but fivefold I think is a bad word because he tries to describe it, I don't know, in some way that is confusing. It's five roles that are available that he calls people into to do the following. Verse 12, for the perfecting of the set apart ones. So we are to be set apart, right? We're supposed to be set apart. And he says these five roles, which could be more than one in one person. Sometimes you find more than one in a person. Sometimes you need separate people to do them. But these five aspects of things that roles that you need in your life are for the perfecting of you, the set apart ones. To the work of service, to a building up of the body. That's what those roles are there to do. There are supposed to be men at all times, we're going to see, available to do these roles. To be sent out ones, to be prophets, to be shepherds, to be evangelists, to be teachers. He says, These roles are for perfecting the set apart ones. And this is to go on, that's how I know they're still available, until, verse 13, they are to be available. He says he has set them out there. He gave them until. Until what? Until we all come to the unity of the belief and of the knowledge of the Son of Elohim, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the completeness of Messiah. Really? Has that happened yet? I don't think it was even close. Go look on YouTube and watch any 3, 4, 5, 6 different messianic services or Hebrew roots or whatever you want to call it, and see if everybody's on the same page. You are not going to see it. Okay? You are not going to see it. And by the way, and then I get in trouble because I'll call some of it out. And people get mad at me. But you know that's part of the role? Because listen to the next part of the role. They're supposed to, verse 13, do this until we come into the unity of belief and knowledge, etc., to a perfect man, a complete man, right? Perfect there is tamim, the idea of completeness, fullness, to the measure of the stature of the completeness that is Messiah. As he was complete, we're supposed to be complete. He says, so that we should no longer be children. So there's a growing and maturing process that they're supposed to be mentoring and encouraging and supporting these five roles. There's a growing up process. This is so that we should no longer be children. Because when we're children, we're tossed and borne about by every wind of teaching. I get call after call from people, even after they listen to something I did, then they'll go listen to 5 other people on the same topic and they're all confused. Look, any topic you take and go listen to enough different teachers, you will be confused. And I've told everybody that calls me, I said, look, I don't care if you pick me as your teacher or not, but you need to pick one. Because that's what it says here. You need a teacher. See, when you don't understand something, you need a teacher. When you're going through a lot of drama, trauma, you need a shepherd. Okay, they're the ones to help keep you safe and comfort you, that carry the lamb when the lamb is in distress, etc. When you need to know what's going on, you need an evangelist who's out there, like the promoter, who's saying, hey, you got to watch this teaching. It's awesome. It's great. You need to have that. Or the people that know that, you know where the teachings are, and you're talking about something and you're struggling, say, hey, there's a teaching I can recommend you. That's a promoter. That's the evangelist. Then you have some of you just need someone to crack your heart a little bit. Come on, let's go. Let's do this thing. That's your prophet. And some of you need someone to show up and set something up and be the apostle, be the sent one, okay? So all of this is so that we're not children tossed about by every wind of teaching. In other words, the teaching just can blow anything in any direction all over the place. But you could be born about, which means you're carried along with it. You're gonna be born by the teaching. It's gonna carry you. He says, by the trickery of men and cleverness onto craftiness of leading astray, which, by the way, doesn't mean that they're even aware that they're doing it. I don't want you to think that every time you read this that whoever's doing it consciously on purpose. They just don't know any better either. But you should be no longer tossed about. So that means the fivefold role, those different roles, are there to help you know where the danger parts are. What do you do as a child? What does a parent do with a child but say, that will hurt you, don't go there, don't do this, don't touch that, don't eat that, because it will hurt you. And then I call out that there are ministries out there doing this, that, and the other thing, and you get all mad at me. Well, that stuff will hurt you. Okay? You know, there's a ministry that all of you are aware of that just posted a video saying it's absolutely no problem and encouraged to go to Sunday church as long as you don't treat it like it's the Sabbath. What? And it's posted by them. Just go look it up. Just came out. Okay? It's only 7 minutes. I would play it for you, but people would think that I'm being too mean. But you need to know. Okay? That... And I'm not saying that I'm even possibly misreading it. He said, I want to be very clear, and said it like 5 times, that he's never been against going to a Sunday church, as long as you don't use it as a replacement calling it Sabbath. So, and that's okay as a set apart one to go in there because you're going to be some sort of light. Look, if you're being a light in there, they'll throw you out. So the only reason anybody would go is because they want to be there. Otherwise, they are lying and hypocrites. Because if you were really living this out and walking it out, quote unquote, as a witness in the church, and some of you did that, they threw you out and let you know how unwelcome you were. Did they not? And some people are going to be, they're going to watch this and they're going to be all mad at me for doing this. Look, you posted it. Don't get mad at me. And all I'm doing is saying what you said. You said, is it okay to worship on Sunday? And you said, yes. Okay? And it wasn't one of those, well, we can worship any day. You specifically said in the Sunday church, you could go. Elder watched it. I made him watch it. He was not happy with me. He's like, and he walked away halfway through. I said, no, get back here. There's three more minutes. Okay? Because he thought at first, well, I could see how he could. I said, no, keep watching. He's going to make it clear that there's nothing you can spin here. So should I not be warning you about that? That this is where people are headed, and then they end up there and they find out that, is that a proper set apart behavior to go to Sunday church? No. I don't see how that could ever work. How can you sit there and how is that witnessing anything? And listen to them basically say everything opposite and against what you believe. Okay, so you're there because you want to be there, because where you've always been is where your friends are and everything else. You're not witnessing anything. Okay? One of the little kids says, nope. I don't know if it was about what I was saying, but he was agreeing, which was good. Okay? Look, and I wasn't going to say anything about that, but it fits here, this whole idea of being borne about by every wind of doctrine, every wind of teaching. Because people are going to listen to that going, oh, there's this big guy, teacher guy, he's on YouTube, and he's saying it's perfectly great to go do it. As a matter of fact, you should go, he said, so that you can witness to people, because you know, you can only fish in the same pond so much, you got to go fish in other ponds. So now he was sending them out as missionaries into the churches. And Billy's doing this. He's like, yeah, that's exactly what he said. Really? I don't think you need to go be missionaries into the churches. And if you actually were, they'd throw you out in a heartbeat, in a half a heartbeat, if they knew you were doing that. And so what would be the point of that? You know? But this is because we don't have proper fivefold guys out there who are guarding the unity of the Spirit of Truth. I mean, these guys have watchman roles. They're not just teaching and shepherding, etc. Their role is to help bring people to the completeness of Messiah, not into the mixed mess of the worldly interpretation of all this. Now, some of you again are going to be watching going, well, you shouldn't say things like that. Well, somebody needs to. Don't you think so? How would you respect your leadership who's like not saying anything about stuff that's going on right under our noses? Look. So he says he gave some to be these five roles for the perfecting of the set apart ones until we come into the fullness, etc., which we're not, so that we're not little children anymore, so we're no longer to be children, which means somebody has to act like a parent and tell you, knock it off, cut it out, right? Of course, everybody loves to hear that when I say it to them. And so it always goes so well. He says, but listen, he says in verse 15 now, he says, but maintaining the truth in love, maintaining the Torah, maintaining Yeshua, maintaining the light, the life, the way, the truth. You can't maintain the truth in a Sunday church. There's just no way. I mean, this is going to make me very popular, I'm sure. Okay? But you can't do it. Because they've eviscerated it and said it's been done away with. So how can you maintain something that's been eliminated? So I'm not picking on anybody. I'm just telling you the truth. All right? He says, maintaining this in love. So is it loving for me not to let you know and warn you of stuff that's going on right under your noses and all around you? No, that's not loving. Am I saying these things in a mean spirit? No, I'm not. They are doing what they do. I'm not judging it. I didn't call them names or anything. I'm just letting you know this is what's happening. And it's not like I'm reading something that came out. They literally posted it as a separate, like an In Focus. They don't call it In Focus. They call it their own thing. But it's just a little... So they wanted everybody to know this. So I'm only saying something they put out there this week and promoted. And I didn't say one thing they didn't say. But you should have somebody who's willing to do this in love to maintain the truth. Because I love you guys. I don't want you to get a moment where you get all upset with me and then you decide to go over there without telling you what's over there. I mean, you can still go if you want. I mean, you're free to go anywhere. But I'm just saying, you should know what's being taught, what the positioning is. And by the way, let me just throw this out there because it just seems to fit into the moment. When I'm not here and Rabbi Tom or Elder Billy is at the microphone, okay, neither one of them has any intention of setting positional policy. So please never take anything that didn't come out of my mouth as a policy, because they're saying what they're saying. They may not have gotten it across exactly as they intended, et cetera. So I'm not saying that they're going to be wrong, because they just may be responding in a way to you and you took it in a certain way. Because I listened to what Elder said during the Torah study and I could see how some of that could be read a certain way. And there needs to be a disclaimer that says, he did try to say, but I want it to be much stronger. Don't take anything that doesn't come out of my mouth as policy. So you don't take something he said and take it as permission to do something. He never intended it that way, so I'm not picking on him at all. What I'm just saying is there is a vertical structure and how policy and positions are established. And in this group, if it didn't come out of my mouth, it didn't happen. Okay? And that's not to say anything negative about them. I don't think he said anything wrong. But I could see that certain things he said could have been taken in a certain way, depending on if a person wanted to. The things I say that people take in ways I never meant them, and they'll call up and Billy be like, Rabbi didn't say that. Because they just take it how they take it. And so let's just be careful. Anything that you ask that's going to be something you're going to now take and walk with, if you're asking one of them, just make sure the disclaimer is that as a policy, unless they're saying that this is what Rabbi said, and he said a lot of things on Tuesday, like, I'm not real sure, we're going to ask Rabbi, etc. Those are things you never should take as positions. Okay, is that fair? That keeps them safe and keeps you safe, all right? Because then all the blame only goes to me. If it's wrong, then it's all on me. It just keeps it all in one hand as far as that stuff's concerned. Some of you watching now, man, this guy's out of control with his power and all this. This is the vertical of your scriptures, okay? If you don't like it, that's okay. Don't come here. Don't worry about it. But this is plus this way you do not get wind of trickery of anything else. Not that they would do it on purpose, but if they said something and you took it as being different than what I said or some other way, it will confuse you. And we do not want you borne about and by anything just because of the way you interpreted something. But listen, those two guys do a fabulous job of speaking in alignment with what I say. Okay? But some of you are slick and you try to get an answer out of them because you didn't know you're not going to like the answer out of me, and then you try to get around it. And so you try to wait till I'm not around to ask them questions. I hear about it. I know it. And Elder's really good about saying, no, 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 not going to play that game. We're going to go to Rabbi. Okay? Now, so continuing here, he says, maintaining the truth in love, we grow up. So the whole point is that we're supposed to grow up, right? He says, maintaining the truth in love, we grow up in all aspects of him. All aspects and respects into him. So all the parts of you that are not like him have to grow into. You have to grow into that. How are you going to do that? With the help of the five roles. With shepherding and evangelism and prophets and, you know, set apart, well, sent ones, like apostles, right? Shaliachs, teachers. Okay, all of those guys you need so that you can grow in. Okay, that's the important thing. So you can grow into him who is the head, Messiah. We're still children. We have to grow into him. So we're going into the one who's the head, Messiah, from whom the entire body, joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, according to the working by which each part does its share, causes growth of the body for the building up of itself in love. All right, now, let me kind of unpackage that just a little bit. Okay, so here, it's talking about, from him, the entire body, joined and knit together by what each joint supplies. Now, that doesn't mean each one is now given a word or given this or given that. You have a role to play. Part of that role is that you're here. In other words, that you're present with a group of people, and that you show up, and that you're interacting with each other, and you're loving on each other. This part of what makes us a body and knits us together, relationships, right? We're not just a bunch of people show up, listen to a guy speak, and then go home. It's about relationships with each other and building them, which is why I'm so proud of you guys every Saturday after the service. You guys stay here for hours just interacting with each other. All right, so that's fantastic. He says, according to the working by which each part does its share, causing growth of the body for the building up of itself in love. So there's also this part that you play being an irritant, being hard to deal with, because that helps cause growth. Look, in biology, in other sciences, growth comes from an irritation, okay? From stress. You stress something, you irritate it, it grows, all right? And so that may be part of what each one is bringing into this. If we're going to, in meekness, etc., hold together and guard the unity of the spirit of the bond of peace while we're irritating each other and growing. Because we're going to. It's absolutely going to happen. So this I say, he says in verse 17, and witness in the Master. So now again, he's giving us one of those, I said all of that to say this. So this I say and witness in the Master, that you should no longer walk as the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their mind. You need help, is what he says. There are people to help you. And it's also that you stop doing it the way you think is so smart, because that's the futility of your mind like a Gentile. Did you follow what he's saying? He's comparing your way and doing your thing with coming under this authority and structure to come into the fullness and completeness and unity of Messiah. And he's now saying that the way we compare that is being set apart minded or being Gentile minded, worldly minded. He's saying, so this I say to you, you should no longer behave and act and walk like a worldly person who walks in the futility of their mind. In other words, my way is so smart, I don't realize it's futile though. That self-sovereign thing is a futility exercise. It will get you nowhere ultimately, and you're just going to be frustrated because it's futile. It's also infantile and a bunch of other tiles. Okay? He says, now let's understand, he's going to give us a, more of a description now of that mindset. That Gentile mind, that futile mind, has been darkened in their understanding, having been estranged from the life of Elohim because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the hardness of their heart. The darkness, or having been darkened in their understanding. Go listen to the darkness and light teaching to understand what that verse is about. And I know I covered it. Having been darkened, right? Yeshua is light. The truth is light. All that self-sovereign stuff is darkness. Worldly stuff is darkness. So their hearts have been darkened in their understanding. So their understanding of things is through the not the light, but the dark. Their understanding is coming out of darkness. They've been estranged. They're strangers now to the life of Elohim because of what? The ignorance that is in them because of the hardness of their heart. So they don't want, they don't like, they don't want to submit, they don't want to be under authority, etc., etc. That's the hardness of their heart. This is the ignorance that is in them. I'm going to figure this out. Yahweh just talks to me directly. The Spirit is in everybody, blah, 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 blah. They've become, in verse 19, callous, having given themselves up to indecency, to work all uncleanness with greediness. Have you ever seen anybody go through that process? I've seen it all too often. That a person who, wherever along the path, ended up getting their feelings hurt or something happened and some negative reaction to the vertical, and they become hardened in their heart, callous, and then in their ignorance, they then convince themselves the fault is in the vertical, not in themselves, and they end up in indecency and uncleanness and all that other stuff. This is reality. If this is you, own it and fix it. All right, and then move on. You can do that. He wants you to look at this as a mirror and see yourself in it, own it, and fix it. He says, don't do this. He says, look at verse 20, but you have not so learned Messiah. You haven't learned Messiah this way. Messiah teaches you a very clear and strong and straightforward vertical. Messiah teaches you that there is authority, and it's not you. It's him. And see, not even him, it's the Father. He points directly up. Look, if he's pointing up and not taking anything on himself, why do you? Messiah himself doesn't do that. He says, I only do what my Father says to do. I only say what he says to say. I am not in charge. Even though all this authority is given to him, he says, but I'm doing it completely under authority myself. All of us are in the middle. So we all have authority over somebody or something, if at the very minimum yourself. But you're supposed to be then submitted under a vertical authority. Otherwise, we end up with the problem, and I think he talks about this maybe a little bit out of order. Because we are callous, and we want to do these indecent things and unclean things and everything else because we want what we want, we've become estranged from Elohim, and we've wallowing in our ignorance have convinced ourselves we're so smart and we're okay. And we say brilliant things like, oh, well, he knows my heart, which is somehow a justification thing. It's, yeah, well, yeah, Michael just said, he knows your heart. That should be terrifying. Okay, the fact that you should know that he knows exactly where your heart's at with all of this. So that's really critical that we get that. So, continuing here, he says, verse 20, right? He says, you have not so learned Messiah, if indeed you have heard him and were taught by him as truth is in Yeshua. So, this is comparing the callousness, okay? So, the callousness is, by the way, being compared to verse 18, which is saying, right? I mean, verse 17, which is talking about that, no, I wrote the wrong thing in my notes. So comparing to verse 16, where it talks about how we're knit together in love and building itself up in love, he says, and that's the way we're taught through Messiah. Then on the other side is, we shouldn't be any more this other way with callousness and hardness of heart. So there's a comparison of two different approaches. The Yeshua-like, the heart approach versus this other callous approach. Okay? And that's really the thing that we need to be doing. We have to understand that hardening of heart, the darkening of our hearts and our thoughts as we're going through these things. Now, he then says in verse 21, he says that you've not learned Messiah, verse 21, if indeed you have heard him and were taught by him. So if you were taught by him, you have to hear him. In other words, Shema, you have to hear and do. Do you hear and do what Messiah says? Messiah gave us the commandments. Do you? He says, if you love me, guard my commandments. What commandments? Go listen to the Do You Know the Father and the Son. Understand who gave us the commandments. Now, they're the Father's commandments, but Yeshua is the word that spoke them. He is the voice. Yeah, when the Father says, obey my voice, Yeshua is the voice. He's the voice of the Father. And so this is critical as we go and understand this. If we're looking at the verses, this is how we demonstrate our knowing Messiah. You claim to know him. He says, what did 1 John say? If you say you know him and do not keep the commandments, you are a liar. So this is how we demonstrate knowing him. He says, you indeed have learned Messiah. It says, if you've not learned it so, but you have indeed learned Messiah, if indeed you hear him and do what he said, then you're taught by him as the truth is in Messiah. The Torah, the light, the life, the way, all of these things are all in him. Now, how do you get that in Sunday when they've done away with all of the things that he is? All they want to keep is that he died for you and that he's Messiah. They don't want to keep that he's the truth. They don't want to keep that he's the word. They don't want to keep that he's the Torah. They don't want to keep that he's the light. You know, on day one, Torah was put into the world. It says, let there be light. Yeshua was brought in. There was no physical light brought in until day four. Sun, moon, stars, etc. So let there be light. Go listen to the teaching. It's one part. Yeshua, the light of the world. That's an old teaching. Okay? And so, we're talking about light here versus darkness again. Go listen to that teaching too. I know it's a long one, but it's great. All right, now, he says, if indeed you have heard him and were taught by him, as Yeshua is in the truth, the truth is in Yeshua, that you put off. He says, I want you to put off with regard to your former way of life. You can't come into this and still behave the same as you used to. You can't still live your former way of life. He says, the old man, that's the reference of the old man, is your former way of behaving, acting, thinking, doing. Being corrupted according to the desires of deceit and to be renewed in the spirit of your mind. Okay, so what he's saying is, to demonstrate that you know Messiah, you have to do the first part I told you. Then verse 21 says, this demonstrates that you heard him. If indeed you've heard him, the truth is in you, that you then put this off. So verse 22 is saying, this is how you demonstrated. You put off the old man. That's how you demonstrate that you heard him. Because if you heard him, that's what you would do, isn't it? But if you didn't hear him, then you're going to keep walking and walking and walking. If I say to the child, those cookies are not for now. Don't touch them. And the child walks over and takes one. He didn't hear me. Okay? And I walk over and say, did you hear what I said? Yes. Then why'd you take a cookie? Because I wanted one. Whatever they say. But the thing is, your actions demonstrate if you hear. You say to somebody, but you didn't hear what I said. You didn't hear me. Oh, yes, I did. But then you didn't do. So then that proves you didn't hear. The words entered your ears, so I guess you heard the words, but you didn't listen. Okay, the word that's being translated heard here is more about listening. Listening is more active. The Shema is a listening thing. I'm hearing and doing. Hearing is just sound going in your ears, I guess. But the listening here is the part of the problem. Now, he says that you are to put off this old way of life and be renewed in the fullness of the intention of your mind, the spirit that's in your mind. So this is Philippians 2:5, right? Let this mind be in you, that is in Messiah Yeshua. So we have this renewing of the mind. So you put off the old man, your former way of life, and to accomplish that, this must be renewed in the spirit of your mind. So in order to, that's how you accomplish the previous verse. You can walk in the newness of life only by renewing your mind. Because as a man thinketh, so he does. And so you have to change the way you think in order to change what you do. So this is, again, is a comparison of what it means to be set apart. You can, if you're going to act like the world, no matter what you claim, you're not set apart. You have to think differently, and then you'll behave differently to be set apart. You have to bury the old man. You have to walk in newness of life. You have to go ahead and no longer be like the Gentiles in the futility of their minds. Remember, your mind is futile. His mind is right. So you have to change your mind to his mind. Let this mind be in you. So some of you think, well, I don't think like a worldly person. Well, if you're thinking for yourself, you are, instead of thinking like he thinks. Well, how do I know if I'm doing that? Get counsel. Because a person whose job it is to counsel you, who has one of these five roles, may be able to let you know if you're thinking your thinking or his thinking. That's part of their job, is to help you know which is which. Continuing, he says, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you put on the renewed man. So now he says, renew your mind and then put on, actually go and do this new thing. Now, the idea says here is a renewed man, a renewed mind. This reminds me of Jeremiah 31, which has the renewed covenant. So what is the renewed covenant in Jeremiah 31? It's the old covenant being cleaned off and wiped off after it was trampled on by Israel and being reestablished. What is the new man? It's the old man being cleaned up and wiped off, clean the slate of all the junk and grime and everything else that accumulated on you, back to the original factory setting. So it's not like you're a different person. You're still you, but you're now you being reset correctly. So it's a renewing of your mind. It's the same mind you have. You're just going to renew it and clean all the junk out of it. So you think right. And you're going to renew you as a person so you act right. So it's not like we're talking about you're a new creation. Yes, you're a new creation, meaning you're being now recreated as you originally created to be by peeling away all of the junk that doesn't belong there. It's just like if you go and play or work or anything in a dirty area and you now have filled with all kinds of filth all over your body, you go in the bath or a shower and you wash that all off. Now, are you the same person you were when you walked in? Yes. But now you've removed some things. It's the same thing here when it talks about renewing your, you know, the spirit of your mind, but also renewing you as a man itself. It put on the renewed man, which was created according to Elohim. See, this is talking about that factory reset. You were created from the beginning. You came into this world a creation of Elohim with the intention that you be and do certain things, but you didn't know and you weren't raised right. And the world around you didn't show you anything so you could learn right. He's saying, but now you're going to actively choose to do these things. All right? He said, and you are to put on the renewed man, which was created according to Elohim in righteousness and set apartness of the truth. That's what it was supposed to be from the beginning, all the way back to Adam and Chava. Okay? It was supposed to be in righteousness and set apartness, in other words, for the purpose of serving and worshiping Yahweh. That's why man was brought into existence. He says, in the set apartness of the truth. So all of this is in the context that Yeshua is flowing through it. Life is flowing through it. The light is flowing through it. The word, the Torah is flowing through all this. Because that's how this all started. Before anything else existed, Yeshua, the truth, the light, and all that stuff was brought in on day one. That was the first thing brought in. So everything else is built on that. Nothing else. Let there be light, truth, life, Messiah, Yeshua, etc. All that brought in the Torah, the Word. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was right there from the beginning. And then the Word we know is put, this is John 1 and starting in verse 1. And then verse 14 in John 1 says, "In the that Word that was in the beginning that was with Elohim was Elohim was eventually put into a flesh suit." In verse 14, put on a flesh suit and dwelled amongst us. Running out of time here. I want to finish the chapter. He says that all of this, again, comes back to this idea of being set apart. So we were created according to Elohim in righteousness, set apartness of truth, but we have become Gentile, worldly, and dead in trespasses and walking in the futility of our mind. So we have to fix that problem. That is our problem. We need a reset. Thing is, there's no button. You actually have to go through the work of resetting. You have to make choices to think differently, choices to act differently. These are all your choices you have to make. You have to choose to think, act, behave, etc., believe differently. There's no button to just push and then you reset. It's not like when your computer's acting poorly, you just turn it off and turn it back on. There's no restart button on a human being. We have to actively reset. It takes a little more work. Okay? Think about the more work when you have a computer and you have a corrupted hard drive. Now you can't just hit reset anymore. You need to actually just take that out and put a new one. Thing is, you don't have replaceable parts. You have to take the corrupted and fix it. See, when you have a corrupted hard drive, you take it out and just put a new one in. It's not fixable. Thankfully, human beings, when we're corrupted, are fixable. We can choose to get fixed. We can choose to actively participate in the reset. This is exciting. You guys get excited that we can do that. Okay? I mean, you're not just doomed to this futile mind. Now, you can choose to, but you're not doomed. That's your choice. He tells you, you can do these things. He says, therefore, verse 25, All right, therefore, having put off the false, speak truth, each one with his neighbor, for we are members one with another. Speak truth doesn't mean you're going around teaching Torah, but speak, literally just says speak truth. Be honest with everybody. Okay, speak truth. Put off the false, speak truth. Speak truth also means don't tell everybody they can go do something that's against Torah, or tell them that Torah says they can do something that it doesn't say they can do. Which, by the way, is like telling everybody that in the Saturday, Shabbat congregation that they can go to Sunday church. That is not speaking truth. Okay? He says, put off the false, speak truth with each one with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. In other words, we're each other's family. We care about each other. It says, be wroth, but don't sin. Do not let the sun go down on your rage, nor give place to the devil. Ah, when you lose your temper, you allow Hasatan to come in and really work with your negative emotions. Okay, you got to work on that. Let him who stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands, which is good, so that he has somewhat to share with those in need. Let no corrupt word come out of your mouth, but only such as is good for the use of building up, so as to impart what is pleasant to the hearers. Okay? The word pleasant there is the same word that's for grace. It's the idea of meriting favor. Okay? So he's saying here in this verse, when he says in verse 25 to put off the false, let's go back and begin there. Putting off the false is the wrong understanding of how to live. So put off that false. Then verse 29 here says, let no corrupt. The Greek there is better translated, in my opinion, as useless. Let no useless word come out of your mouth. Things that don't actually go forth and bear fruit. That's going to come back empty. Don't put empty words out there. Speak things you're going to do and don't do them. Speak things that aren't true. Don't put corrupt. Corrupt means bent or twisted or altered or useless. Okay, don't let that come out of your mouth. But only such that is good for use of building up, so as to impart what is meriting favor to the hearers. In other words, stuff that will benefit them, not pleasant. See, pleasant is a terrible translation. It's like that goes back to ear tickling or something. Say only things that are good that will merit favor for them and you. You for saying it, them for doing it. Favor in whose eyes? His eyes. Okay? And do not grieve the set-apart spirit of Elohim by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Okay, so what is that talking about? Do not grieve. He says, we grieve the Ruach when we choose not to change and grow and to continue to behave and act like the old man. Okay, because some of you are wondering what that means. What does he mean by do not grieve the set-apart spirit? It's in the context of everything we just read. It's an easy verse to understand in that context. Not doing what he told you to do or doing what he said not to do will grieve the set-apart spirit. It's not complicated. What's he been talking about now for most of this chapter? The old man versus the new man, the renewed man. So do not keep acting like the old man and grieve the set-apart spirit by whom you were sealed. So what's this idea of being sealed? I want you to picture like the king had a signet ring and wax that they would put a seal on a document, like a stamp of approval or a seal. I don't want to think of it like sealed, meaning like you're guaranteed and you're in, you got your golden ticket or something. That's not what it's talking about here. Okay, you were selected and sealed as being stamped as a selected one, a called out one. And so he says, do not grieve the spirit by whom you were sealed, selected, called to do this. It all started off at the beginning. It says, you were called out. He says, even as he chose us in verse 4 of chapter 1, he chose us. He says, you're called to something. He says, walk worthily of your calling because you have a stamp on you. You were called and chosen to do something. Does that make more sense, that whole sealed thing? Because people use that as, well, I'm sealed, which means I'm in, I'm going to heaven. None of that's in that verse. None of it's true either. Okay? He says, let all bitterness, by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. So in other words, you were chosen for the day of redemption. You were chosen for the first resurrection. All of you were chosen to be in that first resurrection. Whether you get there or not is your choice. But you were selected to be a part of the first resurrection. That's the calling. He says, let all bitterness and wrath and displeasure and uproar and slander be put away from you along with all evil, because that's the opposite of what you were called to. But be kind towards one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another as Elohim also forgave you in Messiah. So I hope this is starting to make some sense now. This chapter and most of Ephesians is trying to help you understand you were selected out of a nothingness that you were in, with only death in your future, and you were brought near out of your nothingness to Messiah when you had no Elohim, you had no covenant, you had no promises. Now take full advantage. Don't squander it. Don't grieve the Ruach. Don't keep acting like the old you. But renew your mind, become the renewed man or woman that you're supposed to be, because you were sealed and selected and called to be in that first resurrection, but you can still choose to not do this and not be there. His sealing you didn't guarantee anything. So like I said, picture that wax seal, like if it was on an envelope, you can break the seal, right? That's how you would open the document, you would break the seal. Well, you were sealed. Don't break that seal. Renew your mind, renew your behavior, renew your choices, make them Yeshua-like. Get yourself vertical. Find the fivefold. Now, we didn't talk about this a whole lot, but those fivefold, I said this, but I have to hit it hard again. They are here now. Because he said until. They have to be here now. But how do I know who is one? That's the hard part. That's what prayer, and by prayer, I mean prayer without your bias looking for what you're looking for. You can't look for what you want it to look like. You have to look for it, what it is. If you're looking for a shepherd, look for a shepherd. Don't look for a shepherd to be what you think a shepherd should be. You're looking for a teacher, look for a teacher. Look for the anointing and the appointing of these roles in somebody, whether it looks like what you want it to look like or think it should look like. But it is him. I'm really tired and worn out with people trying to convince me of all these people they want me to look at on YouTube, and a lot of them are in mainstream, and telling me how anointed and appointed they are. Usually because they're talking about some end time prophecy nonsense. And I'm sorry, but they're not. Okay, is there any doubt that Ephesians 4, chapter 4, verse 11 is talking about people that are Torah committed? Okay, I'm not just saying pursuing, I mean Torah committed, that's why they're responsible to help you. Is there any doubt? So if they're doing Christmas and Easter and eating pork and Sunday and all that other stuff, could they even remotely be a fivefold person? No. So let's get over that already. Okay? Let's get over that already. You are looking for someone who's holding all of this to the highest possible standards, and the words that come out of their mouth is absolutely the Ruach convicting in you his words. Oh, those people do exist, and you need to find them. Paul otherwise is lying. He says, these guys will be available until, and we have not reached the until. And so we need to find them. He says, they have been, according to this, it says in verse, it says, he gave some to be. So he's anointed and appointed some to be those five things. I want to encourage you that it's your job, your role, to find them, okay? Or find one or two of them who are wearing more than one hat. Now think of them as five different hats you could be wearing. Okay, sometimes I'm wearing a teacher hat. I'm teaching you, like, how to keep Shabbat, how to tithe, how to eat correctly. These are teaching things, right? The holy days, teaching. I taught you about forgiveness. I taught you about marriage. I taught you about, these are teaching things. Other times, like today, I'm cracking that whip trying to get you to do it. That's prophet things, okay? The teacher teaches you what to do, when to do it, everything else. The prophet is just like, wake up, let's do it. Stop playing around, stop goofing off, stop procrastinating, stop making excuses, let's get it done. That's the prophet role, okay? And you should not be concerned with the delivery method. The delivery method is the method of each one. I'm sure that Jeremiah didn't sound exactly like Isaiah, who didn't sound exactly like Ezekiel, who didn't sound exactly like, none of them sounded exactly alike. Nor did James, John, Peter, etc. sound exactly alike. But they all needed to be treated with the same level of honor and respect and authority. because of the role, not because of the delivery method. Because I can tell you, listening to the way Paul writes, you would not have liked his delivery method. Okay? He was pretty in their face quite a bit. You don't think he was kind of mocking almost when he said, I want to feed you meat, but you're choking on the milk? You don't think he was getting in their face and saying, come on, guys, wake up, grow up. I want to give you meat. You're choking on the simple stuff. That's what he sounded like in my head. I mean, he didn't sound all gentle and nice and everything, whatever you're thinking maybe he sounded like. He's like, come on, really? You guys are doing things even though it was unheard of among the Gentiles, he says to them at times. What is wrong with you people? That's what Paul sounded like in my head. I don't know what he really sounded like. He certainly wasn't playing any games. And so, you know, I mean, if anybody was more gentle, you know, on that side of gentleness, it was more like John. Okay, although he comes right out and says, look, if you say you know him and don't do what he says, you're a liar. That's pretty strong. He just called a bunch of people liars. Say you know him and don't do what he said, you're lying. If you don't know him, if you don't keep the commandments. Wow. I don't know how people get through 1 John in the Sunday church. Those who say they know him and don't keep the commandments are liars. How do you spin that? I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's spinnable to me. But I watch people do it every day. And a lot of them are quote unquote peers who are supposedly teaching Saturday groups about Torah. And it's frustrating to watch the people being taught this way. Frustrating because there's really nothing I can do about it. And there's really nothing that I'm supposed to do about it except sit and watch this happen all the time and hope that people might get some discernment and realize they're sitting in the wrong place. Okay? Because they are. I don't know what else to say. All right? I hope that was helpful. Let's go before the Father. Okay? Father, we come before you. And Father, we want to get this right. We want to grow into the fullness of what you intended us to be. We want to grow up and be adults of Israel. We want to grow and no longer be children tossed about, et cetera, et cetera. But we want to find those fivefold roles and those people and submit and follow and listen and be instructed by them, guided by them as they are guided by you. We want to walk worthily of the calling that you've given us. So, Father, we come to you humbly, asking that you would encourage us and strengthen us to truly bury the old us, the old person that we were, and not walk any longer in the futility of our minds like the world does, but to submit fully to the mind of Messiah and to walk in a way that eventually leads to the fullness of the measure of the stature and completeness of Messiah. So, Father, we thank you for the opportunity, for the calling. We thank you for the seal that you've chosen us, that if we would do our part, we could be a part of the calling of the first resurrection. So, Father, we thank you and we praise you. We give you all glory and honor in the name above all names, Yeshua our Messiah. Amen. Amen. Amen.